Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast, breaking news edition. In case you haven't heard by now, we're going to tell you about it. Jabari Parker is coming home. He signs a two-year contract worth approximately $40 million with a team option for year two to come to his hometown Chicago Bulls. Joining me now is Kevin Anderson, my longtime friend and longtime Bulls pre- and post-game producer. Kevin, obviously this is a move that we heard about yesterday on Friday originally, and the Bucks cooperated by rescinding the qualifying offer, allowing the Bulls to make the signing in what looks like a favorable term for them in that they get a second-year team option. So if Jabari would happen to be re-injured or not be in a particularly good fit with the group that they have, they could always move on and get involved in 2019 free agency.
Yeah, it's been a kind of a roller coaster last 24 hours or so, I think, for most Bulls fans, because in face value, you know, the report was certainly Casey Johnson had it on Friday night that it was going to be a 2 years, $40 million deal. But there is a massive difference between having 2 years fully guaranteed and what it is now is a second-year team option, which still gives the Bulls flexibility in 2019. You know, it's one of those things that the Bucks absolutely did the Bulls a favor by rescinding the qualifying offer, because if not, the Bulls would have had to give – you're not allowed to have a two-year deal with an option. You can still have non-guaranteed money in that second year, but it's absolutely the Bucks doing the Bulls and Mark Bartlestein a favor. And, yeah, it ended up working out in terms of getting him here. Now it's a matter of seeing how he's going to fit on the basketball court.
Yeah, I know the reaction that I've seen on social media has been very mixed. Some people are excited about the hometown kid coming back, but we've lived that story with Derrick Rose and to a lesser extent with Dwayne Wade coming home for that one season. You know, Parker's fit, it was interesting in the press release the Bulls put out, Gar Forman was quoted as saying that he's a natural fit with our developing young core. Well, I'm sure some people could argue that, you know, Jabari's best minutes in his NBA career have been at the power forward spot, and with this Bulls team, he's going to have to play at the three. Now, I know the NBA has kind of morphed into a positionless game where you're kind of going with, point guard, two wings, and two bigs, and you can kind of figure out lineups as you go, but defensively, I think, is where the real challenge is going to come, because if you look at the advanced stats, both Jabari and Zach LaVine rank among the league's worst defensive players, and that's going to be a challenge to try to stop teams when you have both those guys out on the wing.
Yeah, and the natural fit comment, I think, really raised a lot of eyebrows, because, to be honest, the personnel that they have right now, he is not a natural fit. He's going to be playing out of position. I think Jabari, in a perfect world, would be playing the four position, the power forward position. Clearly, with the Bulls roster, with Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, Bobby Portis, and certainly Robin Lopez, you've got four bigs right there. So you're adding a fifth big, essentially, and having Parker play the three is not ideal, both from a defensive standpoint and in terms of offensively either. So I don't get the natural fit comment, maybe in terms of age.
Yeah, they're all 24 or younger. Yeah. I think that's where the natural fit part comes in.
Yeah. So do you think that is really the motivating factor here to get a true core of basically half your roster is under 25?
Well, I think that the Bulls were looking for another guy who could create his own shot, who could, you know, when the shot clock's winding down, you could go to him and he could find a way to get up a shot or maybe draw a foul. And if you look at Jabari's numbers over his 4 years, I mean, he barely played over half the games he was eligible because of the two ACL injuries. But he shoots 49% from the field for his career, and he had his best year ever last season shooting the three at about 38%. So he is a guy that can score. And I feel like sometimes over the last couple of years we've seen this team struggle, especially in late clock situations, to find a guy who could get up a decent shot. So I think from that standpoint, he helps you offensively, but you know, you wonder about on that other end how they're going to match up against guys who are quicker athletes and whether or not Jabari and Zach can stay in front of guys, because if you're looking to start beating teams 115 to 110, that can get pretty dicey at times.
No, you're absolutely right, and they were not very good defensively last year, and I fully expect them to be dead last in the league in defensive rating this year. I mean, they just don't have the players, unless there is a massive turnaround from an individual standpoint, they just don't have players who are very good defensively. And my biggest concern right now is actually on the defensive end with their perimeter defense. We know that Chris Dunn is a solid defender, but Zach LaVine is a below average defender. And I think we talked to Vincent and Kendall the last few weeks, and Kendall told us that Zach knows he's got to work on his defense. So hopefully that's a big focus, what he's trying to do this offseason. But as it stands right now, Zach is a below-average defender. Jabari is not fit to defend most average wings in the league. And so you're going to have a situation in which you just are going to have a porous defense. They're going to have to average 110 points a game in order to win the majority of their games.
I think going back to the contract situation, though, that's where I think for Bulls fans, you shouldn't get too worried about this because of the fact they hold a team option for next year. If this doesn't work out the way that the Bulls front office and coaching staff hopes, they can just move on. And I think it's a low-risk move. You know, they had the $20 million in cap space by waiving some of the back end of the roster players. So I think one of the things that has frustrated Bulls fans over the years is that they haven't always been aggressive in trying to pursue players when they did have cap space. And this is really a low-risk situation because he'll be here next season. If he plays exceptionally well and the Bulls qualify for the playoffs and they feel like he's a good fit, you can either exercise the team option or you can explore a long-term contract. If not, you know, you can move on. So I think that you got to give credit to Pax and Gar for structuring the contract in a way where there isn't a whole lot of risk. I think the bigger challenge is going to be for Fred Hoiberg to figure out his rotation, because right now it's a mess with all the players that they have. I would assume that Justin Holiday will probably be moved before the season starts because he looks like the guy that will fall completely out of the rotation. Then you got a guy like Chris Felicio who's not going to get any minutes and he's going to make $8 million a season. I don't really know how the rotation is going to be structured in terms of whether the Bulls will start Lopez or Carter at the center position, but either way, it looks like they're 10 deep, and Fred's going to have to figure out how to get the best lineups out there, because I think right now with this move, they're saying that we want to compete for a playoff spot this year.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's clearly they didn't want to sit in a Hinkie-like rebuild in which they spent multiple seasons missing the playoffs and picking the top five. They didn't want to have that happen. I totally get that from a front office standpoint. The interesting part, though, is signing Parker just has this impact on your entire roster. You know, the certainly, where does Bobby Portis now stand with this team? I think he was hoping to get a contract extension before the end of the October deadline. Now, that looks to me like extremely unlikely. And certainly, you go into next season, if they decide not to pick up the team option on Parker, well, then Bobby's probably back in play. But certainly, Bobby, coming off the best season he's had on a pro, is not going to get the minutes and the consistency that he had last year with a healthy Parker in the rotation.
Well, our guy Vinny Goodwill has said on previous podcasts that the Bulls have had initial discussions with Bobby Portis and his representation about an extension. And for folks who don't know how that works, as you go into your fourth season on your rookie deal, the team has the right or the opportunity to offer you a long-term extension before the start of the next season. So the Bulls have until whatever the season opener is going to be, you know, October 20th or whatever, to try to work something out with Portis. And I think that before the Jabari Parker signing, the Bulls would have been receptive if they could have gotten a contract in the, you know, $10 to $12 million range and locked him up for 4 years. I think that would have been something they would have wanted to pursue. Now with the logjam at the power forward spot and with their payroll issues, I think right now they're going to have to tell Bobby and his agent, you're going to have to wait. We're just going to have you on the qualifying offer, and we'll deal with restricted free agency next summer. But it's not a great situation for Bobby, because we all know what he went through with the whole situation with the fight with Nico and the suspension, and he was able to pull himself up from that and have his best season as a pro. I thought that Portis, he kind of surprised me. I mean, he was more athletic than I had seen in his first couple of seasons. He showed that he could make the NBA three on a pretty consistent basis, and I felt like he was almost emerging as one of the leaders of the team because of his passion for the game and the fact that guys really seem to gravitate to the way he plays. And now it's almost like they're sending a message to him that you're not a big piece of what we're trying to do going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if the Portis thing, if they don't work out an extension before the season, if you're going to have a player who might not be fully convinced that he's a part of this long term anymore.
No, I 100% agree. And really, the other big impact is on Laurie. Even though we're going to see conceivably the majority of Parker's minutes play at the three spot, my big concern is Parker is a scorer. And we already just re-signed Zach LaVine, who is a natural scorer, and who you would think going into the season would get the majority of the shots on a nightly basis. But if I want to see Laurie progress, which I think most Bulls fans look at him like a potential multiple-time All-Star, is that you need Laurie to get more than 10 shots a game in order to progress on the offensive end. And now with having Parker come in, you said it earlier, you're absolutely right. The biggest challenge on this team is going to be how Fred Hoiberg manages minutes and manages shots, because not only do you want to have Laurie progressing to shots, certainly Parker's going to. If Parker knows he's going ahead into a free agency year, that if he thinks the Bulls are not going to pick up his team option, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. Well, if he's going to be unrestricted free agent, he's going to want to have a good year to come off of to get a bigger contract. We know that Chris Dunn isn't a classic point guard in the sense that he's a pure passer. He likes to shoot too and likes to score. And you want to get Wendell Carter some reps. I just don't see how this move helps all those things happen and helps you develop that young core that you had. I understand it's a good move from a PR standpoint, and you've got a great storyline with a Chicago native playing in his hometown again. But in terms of pure basketball, that's a lot of shots that are going to be needed that someone's going to be unhappy.
Yeah, I just read an interesting analysis by Kevin Pelton of ESPN looking at some of the advanced stats on Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker, and it was interesting. He came to the conclusion that basically they're the same guy, you know, that Jabari Parker is a front court version of Zach LaVine, a guy who's a high-volume shooter and a poor defender. And with the analysis that Pelton had suggested that, you know, the defensive metrics with those two on the court is frightening. You know, that they, as you mentioned, that there's a good chance that they could rank last in the league in defensive efficiency, especially when both of those guys are on the court. So now I know we've seen some encouraging signs from Wendell Carter in summer league, where he looks like he's going to be a rim protector. But you don't want a freight train running at you every possession, where guys are just getting straight line drives to the basket, because all that's going to do is get the young guy in foul trouble. And he's, of course, right now he's going to be splitting time with Robin Lopez, so it's not like he's going to be back there trying to protect the rim for 48 minutes a game. It's going to be interesting, because you know now the wing is, there's a glut there. Denzel Valentine, who took a bit of a step last year, his minutes are going to fall. You've got Chandler Hutchison, who the coaching staff is excited about, but you have to wonder how many minutes he's going to get. And for a guy like Hutchison, who to me is more of a complimentary player who's best in doing a lot of the intangibles, if he's only playing bit minutes, I don't think he's really going to stand out that much. It creates a lot of questions. I understand that it's still in the earlier stages of a rebuild, but I think right now what they're looking at is trying to get as many talented young players on the roster as possible, and it could always facilitate trades down the line as well.
You know, it's funny. I go back to the draft, and I know you and I were both really high on Mikal Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And hypothetically, with the roster they have right now, in terms of making the playoffs and being a good fit and playing together, quite honestly, you'd rather have Mikal Bridges than Wendell Carter with this roster. Now, I think Wendell, from what we saw of him in summer league, he has the potential to be a great player. I know it's only summer league, but he looked really, really good on both ends of the floor. But I think you'd rather go into the season with the starting lineup of playing Laurie at the five, which I think he'd be fine on most nights, playing Parker at the four, Bridges, Levine, and Dunn. Like that to me is a starting five that makes sense and that I'd be really excited about. But that's not the situation, and we don't have that.
Yeah, but you'd have defensive issues with that lineup as well, because Lowry, even though you can see he's done a lot of work in the weight room this past offseason, he's not a guy that's going to be a natural defender in the post. I think Carter has impressed me with his skills on the defensive end. I knew that he was a decent shot blocker coming out of Duke, but his ability, his explosion is much more impressive than I thought when I watched him in college. Obviously, when you watch Duke this past year, you kind of gravitated to watching Marvin Bagley, but Carter has shown me that he knows how to leave his man, rotate over on the weak side to block shots, and I think that that's going to be a really strong pick for them, especially considering the fact that Robin Lopez could be gone after next season and Felicio hasn't developed at all. So I can understand the pick. Obviously, it was part of a long-term strategy that they had in mind is solidify the post position, and I'm pleasantly surprised by Carter. I think that was a solid pick. Obviously, we've talked at length how I was the president of the Mikal Bridges fan club, yeah. But from what I've seen of Carter in summer league, I think they got it right. I think this is a guy that is going to be a really natural fit alongside Lauri Markkanen. I think you can envision the things they can do with high low sets, with pick and pop type of things, actions with the guards, and I think both of them are kind of like interchangeable parts because they can score inside and out. And Lowry's kind of sneaky too with those weak side block shots. I mean, he's not known as being a great defender, but I think that skill is going to develop as he gets more time in the league. I think that positionally they're okay. They just have to figure out what they're going to do with some of the excess wings that they have. And like I said, I would anticipate that, just to do a favor to Justin Holiday for being a good citizen and for being one of the leaders on that team last season, maybe they try to move him along to a contending team that could use maybe one more piece off the bench, because right now I just don't see him being in the rotation.
Yeah, it's funny. Carter, I hope, is a good rim protector, because he's got two matadors out on the wing, so he's got a lot of opportunity to really play defense close to the rim. Offensively, how do you see the projected five starters, whether it's Lopez or Carter at the five, how do you see these five guys working together, and what do you think we should expect from that unit?
Well, I think what Fred's going to do is try to emphasize what he has since he arrived, which is trying to push the ball up the floor, have guys run to open spots on the wing, and try to get some early offense, where what they'll do a lot is try to push the ball up the court, run an initial screen and roll, and have one guy dive to the basket, and then have two guys out on the wings who can knock down threes. And Parker has shown the ability to hit that three ball. That's something that he's gotten better with every season that he's been in the NBA. So I think you're going to have multiple wing threats with Parker, Markkanen, and Levine, and with Dunn pushing the pace and Carter running the floor, I think you can get some early offense with this group. The problem's going to be once you have to bog down into a half-court set, if you're going to run isolation ball with either Markkanen, Levine, or Parker, you're going to have the other guy standing around and watching. And that's something that we used to see when it was Jimmy and the 1 year when Dwayne Wade was here, where the offense would kind of deteriorate into whoever had the ball late in the shot clock would end up forcing up a mid-range jump shot that was usually pretty heavily contested. Hopefully they have enough athletes now that they can avoid those scenarios. But Parker can be, I think, an ISO player. I know when he was initially drafted, some people projected him as a Carmelo Anthony-type player, a power small forward who could, overpower smaller wings in the post. And if he stays healthy, I don't think there's any questions about him being able to score. I think the biggest concern is what you mentioned earlier, the fact that you've got three guys who could justifiably be the focal point of the offense in Levine, Parker, and Markkanen, and how do you make sure that they get enough touches to keep them all happy?
Yeah, it's not exactly the three alphas 2.0 on this team, but they are all offensive skilled players. And I think you're absolutely right about transition offense. I think is going to be really fun to watch. I think from a basketball standpoint, Bulls fans will enjoy watching this team offensively, especially with the pace. The half court, like you just said, I think is going to be something Fred has to work on, because if it's iso ball every other possession, they're going to be in trouble. And that's not the way they can play. But I am encouraged by the fact that both Levine and Parker are decent three-point shooters. And Parker's coming off the best year he had at a pro, shooting the three. And we know what Zach's capable of pre-ACL injury, that they're both can hover around 40%. And if they can do that, they're going to be a very good perimeter team. It's just now a matter of having Dunn run the offense and what can they do in the half-court set.
So, you call yourself a Bulls fan? NBC Sports Chicago wants to hear from you. Visit NBCSportsChicago.com/BullsAF and tell us what makes you the biggest Bulls fan. You could win the chance to be recognized as our Bulls authentic fan of the game, including tickets to a game, a behind-the-scenes tour, be shown on TV, and much more. NBCSportsChicago.com/BullsAF.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Schanowski, joined by my longtime Bulls pre- and post-game producer, Kevin Bulldog Anderson. And, you know, one of the things that's going to be interesting is it seems like the Bulls marketing team really loves to let Tommy Edwards bellow out from Chicago. So he'll get to do that again this season with Jabari Parker, although I think at this point, don't you think Lauri Markkanen should be the last guy introduced?
Yeah, you know what? That's interesting because I was thinking that by the nature of his deal, that LaVine maybe has earned that right to be the last guy introduced. But opening night, it's going to be curious to see who gets it because you could make a case for all three guys. And I think having the hometown appeal of being from Simeon certainly plays into an argument that you could say for Parker. But I think when you still look at who the face of the franchise is, I think by default it's Zach LaVine. And I think Markkanen certainly is up there. But certainly those three players are going to be on billboards and promotional material and tickets and magazines all over the city.
Let's talk a little bit more about Jabari Parker, the person. Obviously, this is a high-class individual, one of only two players to win four state championships during his high school career at Simeon. Of course, he went on to play 1 year for Mike Krzyzewski at Duke before he was drafted number two overall in the 2014 draft, which is, if you redrafted that one, that would be completely turned upside down, but that would be a topic for another day. But this is a high-class individual. I know he posted a video just the other night of him playing pickup ball on a playground in Milwaukee, and he said, you know, how much he loved the city. And I almost think that at that point he knew he was probably leaving, and he wanted to get it out there, you know, what he felt about playing his four seasons with the Bucks and representing the city of Milwaukee. And this is a guy who's very active in the community. He wrote a long, beautiful essay in the Players Tribune talking about the social issues in Chicago and how he wanted to help make Chicago a better place and create more opportunities for young people in impoverished neighborhoods. And I think he's going to do a lot of great work being able to come back to his hometown. I think he's excited about his possibilities to contribute to the city as well as contribute on the basketball floor.
Yeah, and he said some very nice words thanking the city of Milwaukee and the Bucks organization for supporting him throughout his entire career so far. And I think the reality is that the Bucks, with their tax situation, they're very unlikely to match most offers that Parker was going to get. And I think you're right. I think he knew from early as several weeks ago, if not sooner, that it's just a situation where he was unlikely to come back to Milwaukee. But now he goes to his hometown. And by all accounts, and we're not just saying this, from everybody we've talked to behind the scenes, the people that have followed Jabari from his high school days, we did a series called The Drive, which we focused on. We do this in football and basketball every year for High School Lights.
Right.
That we follow one team for an entire season. And our producers and videographers who followed Parker for those years say he is fantastic to deal with. Even as far back as high school, he was very humble, that he was a good individual, and by all accounts that hasn't changed since he has gone to Duke and certainly gone on to a pro and made millions and millions of dollars. I think Bulls fans will be very excited to see Parker on the floor, and I think they're going to be very happy who they get on and off the court.
Yeah, we don't know exactly how it's going to work on the basketball floor, but one thing I can say in having the chance to talk to him a couple of times, just a high-class individual. He cares about the city. You know, he's a family-oriented guy. He's really excited about coming back to Chicago. I know he's going to put all his efforts into representing himself both on and off the basketball court in the highest regard. And I'm excited about seeing how it's going to work out. I mean, I'm always kind of a sucker for the hometown story. I mean, I really enjoyed when Derek was riding high and won the MVP award and led the Bulls into, you know, have the best record in the league two seasons running. It was a great story to follow, and I even got a kick out of Dwayne Wade coming back, even though that season wasn't that successful on the basketball court. You know, a guy who played at Oaklawn Richards and, you know, always talked about that he was a Bulls fan growing up. I mean, it's an interesting story, and it's going to make it a lot more fun, I think, to watch the Bulls as you watch these young guys develop throughout the course of the season. I guess the question people are asking now, you know, John Paxson emphasized that they were going to be patient in the rebuild, and they, if they saw the opportunity to take a chance on the right player, they would do it. So what they're telling us is Jabari Parker is the right player, so I guess that means the rebuild is getting accelerated a little bit. Do you feel that this is a playoff team, or do you think there's still so many questions defensively and with the rotation that there's still a chance that maybe they're going to have another year in the lottery?
I think if they stay healthy, they're a playoff team. There are absolutely questions defensively and how they're going to fit on the court, but they have all training camp to work through a lot of those half-court offensive issues to get through, and certainly they'll put a massive emphasis on defense, especially the rotations, as we get through training camp and into the season. But given the Eastern Conference and the landscape of the East, we know who the top five or six teams are in the East, but those other two spots are really up for grabs. And as long as the Bulls can keep pace offensively with teams, like average, if they can average 105 to 110 points a game, they'll be in the playoffs, even as bad as they are probably going to be defensively. And I truly expect them to be dead last defensively in the league. But if they can be top five offensively, then they will be in the playoffs. The East is still wide open. Those 7 and 8 spots are there for the taking. I think you look at, is Cleveland a playoff team right now? I don't think they are. And you've got certainly other teams that are on the fringe. I think the Bulls, as currently constructed, are a 7 or 8 seed, potential to maybe get a little bit better or, unfortunately, a little bit worse, depending on how guys progress. And they still can do a lot of things, too, between now and the start of the season with the roster. But I think we will see a playoff team in 2018-2019.
Yeah, I think if you want to handicap the Eastern Conference, obviously the top three teams are Boston, Philadelphia, and Toronto, although Toronto is kind of hinting that they are open for business in terms of potentially making some trades. They could get involved in this Kawhi Leonard situation. Yeah. I've heard talk that maybe you could see a DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard trade, which could be some other pieces as well. But you know, I would concede those are probably the top three teams. I think the next tier would be Indiana, Milwaukee, and Washington. So that's 6 right there. Then I think for the last two spots, you're looking at Miami, Detroit, the Bulls, and Cleveland. I think that's the next tier of four teams. So I think that's your top 10 in the East. You know, I don't think either of the New York area teams, the Knicks or Nets, are going to do anything. Atlanta's horrible. I don't think Orlando's ready to do anything. And Charlotte, I think, is kind of treading water. So I'd say that they're in the mix for those 7 and 8 seeds. I know someone tweeted at me earlier today saying, oh, they're going to be a four or five seed.
Oof.
That's a little ambitious.
Yeah.
You know, Indiana had a really good year last season. They should have beaten Cleveland in that first-round series, and they added a couple of guys for their bench in Tyreek Evans and Doug McDermott, who will give them some scoring that they didn't have coming off in their reserve group. So I think that, you know, realistically, the Bulls are probably in that 7-10 range, trying to fight for one of those later seeds, unless everything comes together. You know, they get perfect health, Markkanen takes another step, LaVine looks like he did before he hurt the ACL, and Jabari Parker, same thing. So they have, as you mentioned, they have a ton of offensive potential. So in terms of watchability, it should be a lot of fun, which you know, we're looking forward to in the season ahead. We're just going to have to see how it all shakes out, and if they can get enough defensive stops to be a better than 500 team.
They're not going to be boring. I mean,
I can
guarantee that they will not be boring on the court. They will not be boring off the court either. I mean, this is a team that I think is certainly going to be really fun to watch, and people will love what they see. They'll get really frustrated with what they see too, and I know it's going to be exciting from a fan standpoint, because yes, they've accelerated the rebuild. Absolutely, this was a move they made in order to get back in the playoffs now. It could potentially just be 1 year that Jabari Parker is a Bull. It could be multiple years if things work out. And certainly next summer is going to be absolutely crazy in terms of free agency and all the names that are available and all the teams that are going to have cap space to spend. But for this specific upcoming season, it is going to be a lot of fun to watch this team.
Well, we know one thing for sure. Our friend Kendall Gill is going to be excited. He's been touting Jabari Parker all season long as a guy the Bulls should go after. We couldn't get a hold of Kendall today because his son Phoenix is playing in an AAU tournament out of town. So next Bulls Talk podcast, I'm sure we're going to get 20 minutes plus of Kendall raving about how good Jabari is going to be. I know that part of that's the hometown angle, but I know that Kendall thinks very highly about Jabari's potential as a player, and it's going to be a lot of fun, as you mentioned, Kevin. We're not going to have these 90-85 slogs anymore.
No.
This is going to be a team that's going to get up and down the floor. They're going to score a lot of points, and I think most fans like to watch that type of basketball. So it should be a really exciting season ahead, and you're going to love Jabari Parker on and off the court. So I think because of the fact, just to kind of sum it up, that you know it's a 2-year deal, but it's a team option for the second. It's really a low risk move. And the Bulls had the cap space, so why not take a chance to bring in a young guy and see if maybe you might catch lightning in a bottle?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that the Twitter is really divided on this right now, and there are some Bulls fans just threatening to leave the fandom, and there are some Bulls fans think they're going to be a top four seed, like you said. I think the reality is they'll be somewhere in the middle, but they still are keeping 2019 intact for what they can do. And honestly, I've looked at the numbers. Even if they pick up Parker's option, there is a path, and not a difficult path, to create a max slot for a free agent next summer. There's still that option there.
Yeah, check that Kevin's projection out. He posted it on Twitter. And the one thing that is a little bit concerning there is the cap holes for both Cameron Payne and Bobby Portis are high. So I think you'd have to resolve those situations if you want to be a major player in free agency next year. Don't you think that's going to be the key for them?
100%, yes. And basically, in order for them to get a max slot, you know, the $30 million range for one player, they would have to essentially rescind, July 1st hits next year, they would have to rescind the qualifying offers that they would have to Portis and to Payne and renounce both as free agents. And then that essentially wipes those cap holds off the books. I mean, that gets you there. And then you also have the potential of where they're picking. Right now, if they are picking 15th in the draft, which essentially would be the 8th seed in the East.
Right.
If they pick 15th in the East, that cap hold for that pick is $2.7 million. They could potentially, if they pick 15th or 17th, if they really think they're in on free agency, they could pick a guy that is a European player and then stash him overseas, and then that hit comes off the books as well. There is flexibility, but absolutely the Portis and Payne situations have to be resolved, and I think that's why there is extremely little chance that they extend Portis before the season starts because of that flexibility it would give you next summer.
Yeah, so if you see the Bulls assign Bobby Portis to a long-term extension before opening night, that means they're not expecting to be a player in free agency next summer.
Absolutely.
All right, I think we've covered most of the areas that Bulls fans are curious about in the wake of the news that Jabari Parker signs a 2-year contract. There'll be a lot of things that pop up. We're going to wait to see how the Bulls finish up in summer league play. They got a game coming up against the Pistons. We'll see how that turns out, and if maybe they can hang another summer league banner at the United Center. So, for Kevin Anderson, I'm Mark Schanowski. Thanks for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast. We'll have a lot to talk about coming up later this week. We'll get Kendall in to get his thoughts on the signing of Jabari Parker. So we hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend, where we can find all of our shows at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcasts. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play. Until next time, so long, everybody.